Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick Goudreau. I'm your host. You can find me at ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com or on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and other social media accounts. You can subscribe to the Food for Thought podcast at iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying this podcast, I just ask that you share it with others and leave ratings and reviews. Word of mouth is the best way to increase its listenership, and supporting it is the best way to keep it going. So you can go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau to leave a tip in the jar and to, for instance, get transcripts to this podcast and the Animology podcast as well. There are other perks depending on the level you choose. Thank you so much for your support and thanks for listening. Today's topic is trekking through the Scottish Highlands. Hi, everybody. I hope you're doing fabulously well. I'm excited to see all of you who are joining me at the Compassion in Action Conference. The focus is advocacy, communication, and political engagement, everything you need to know to be the best voice for those who have no voice. You can go to CompassionInActionConference.com, or you can go to ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com. Under events, you will find this event as well as other speaking engagements. We have sponsorships from Tofurky and Veg Fund, and because of that, I'm able to offer 10 scholarships to those who would like to attend the conference for free. Of course, wherever you live, you'll have to get here to Oakland, but the conference fee is waived for you. To apply, just write a 300-word essay about why you want to attend the conference and send it to support@joyfulvegan.com. And at the event, we will also be announcing some pretty exciting upcoming trips, including a new vegan trip with CPG, that's me, which will be in Vietnam. And we're going to some fabulous places, including animal sanctuaries. So attendees of the conference, as well as Patreon supporters, those who are supporting my work, will get first dibs on signing up for this exciting trip. And finally, if you're listening to Food for Thought, you might be interested in Animology podcast, which you can also find everywhere podcasts are played. So hopefully by now you've listened to other travel episodes on Food for Thought. And if you're interested in traveling to the UK and Scotland in particular, I do have an episode already from a trip we did a few years ago to Northern England and Scotland. It's called A Journey Through England and Scotland Through the Eyes of an Animal-Centric Anglophilic Literary Geek. And I'm always happy to share these travel details with you because I do notice that people have so many questions about traveling as a vegan, from vegans and non-vegans alike. Of course, we also get some skepticism from people who think that we're never going to be able to eat wherever we travel. That's mostly from non-vegans. Of course, if you're looking through that lens where you think there's deprivation if you travel. And that's not the lens through which I look, and that's not the experience I have as someone who's been vegan for almost 20 years. And if you listen to the episode I did on our visit to Southern Germany, for instance, you may recall a friend who's more of an acquaintance. He's a lovely, lovely person who grew up in Germany. And when we were going to Germany and we had seen him at a party, he was convinced that we were going to starve. And he couldn't have been more wrong. And I explain all the reasons he was wrong in that episode. And we experienced the same when we were planning our trip to the Highlands in Scotland, because the farther north you go in Scotland and the farther south you go in Germany, it's more rural. And people just think that we're not going to be able to eat. And guess what? We survived. We made it. And I have lived to tell the tale. I was talking to a friend about this trip, and I was saying, and you'll hear about some of our meals as the episode goes on. And of course, we did eat a lot of chips, a lot of French fries and onion rings and fried foods. And my friend said, oh yeah, she's not vegan, and we're fairly new friends. And so she's not that familiar with, you know, my work, my perspective, and our experiences. But she said something like, yeah, I figured as vegans, welcome to Scotland, and, you know, welcome to Scotland for vegans. You know, I figured you'd be eating a lot of fried food. And I thought, no, we chose those foods. We would choose other foods as well. There were plenty of places that had salads and soups, and we chose those as well. And there were times that we did choose the French fries and the onion rings because they're ridiculously, annoyingly delicious. And the truth is, too, there were some places that were a little more limited, but we were always fine. And if we weren't vegan, it's not like the non-vegan choices are healthy and the vegan choices are not. So it's just a real change of perspective. I think that I at least try to communicate with all of you and with anyone I talk to about being vegan and certainly about traveling as vegans. So when we were in Africa in late 2016, early 2017, and you can listen to that podcast episode on our visit to four countries in Africa, the continent of Africa, we visited Rwanda and Botswana and Zimbabwe briefly and South Africa. When we were there traveling around, when I say we, it's David and I, my husband David, and our two friends, our traveling companions, Bridie and Seb, and you're going to hear about them on this trip, we were thinking about our next trip, which is what we tend to do, not only the CPG trips, but also trips that we are able to do together as a foursome. And we just needed something a little more simple, or at least I did after our trip to Africa and our upcoming trip to Thailand. And so we landed on Scotland because it was relatively inexpensive to do this walk and just stay in different inns in the Highlands. And so we chose Scotland. I don't remember exactly how we chose it, but we decided we would do a trip so that we weren't sitting around a lot, not that we ever do, but that would really encourage us to move. And so we chose this trek in the Highlands in Scotland, which is 100 miles, and we started our journey to figure out how to do this. Now, there are a lot of outfits that make it easy for you to do this kind of trek. Certainly, we saw a lot of students on a trek like this, and you know, the West Highland Way is the route we did and is a very popular route. So anybody with a map and a backpack and a tent can do this trek, and you stay at different campsites, and it's very easy, and it's obviously very inexpensive. We chose to actually go through an outfit called Wilderness Scotland, and I can't recommend them highly enough. They were fantastic to work with, and they just took care of everything. So what they did was they arranged for all the accommodations for us, and they arranged for our luggage to be transported to our accommodations each night. So that way our walk just entailed us and a small day pack. We didn't have to trek with a big backpack, and that's what we wanted to do. And so we went through Wilderness Scotland. It's wildernessscotland.com. They have many different kinds of trips. They have group trips, which if you're a single traveler and you want to do something like this, but you don't have anybody to travel with, they have group trips. So you can do the same trek we did with other people. We did the self-guided version, which is literally we had the maps in hand, and you know, you just follow the signs for the West Highland Way the whole time. So we never, there's not a real risk of getting lost. It's a very popular route. And we just, you know, stayed in the accommodations and then just were on our way each day. They also have other kinds of trips. They have wildlife viewing trips and different guided tours. And they focus on Scotland, obviously, being called Wilderness Scotland. And so check them out if you're interested. So we chose the West Highland Way, as I said. It's a level 6 walk. You can choose different trips based on your desire. And the West Highland Way, one of the reasons we chose it is because it was also more challenging, but also because it promised the most diversity in terms of nature and landscape. And it is popular, and it goes from south to north, just starting above Glasgow, and it goes 100 miles up to Fort William. In terms of preparing for a trip like this, there was definitely a lot to think about outside of the regular stuff, like what to pack and what clothes to wear, which shoes to bring, how to prepare for inevitable rain, and of course, what to eat each day. So I'm going to explain the food in a little bit, but let me give you a little info about the other aspects. As far as the clothes, having the right shoes, of course, is tantamount, and all of us are pretty frequent hikers and had shoes that were well broken in. I think that's really key. If you decide to do a trip like this, do not buy hiking shoes a week before you leave. You need to break them in. I think the fact that none of us had any blisters the entire 100 miles we hiked says a lot. Now, I can't speak for everyone else who in their shoes. I don't remember what everybody else had. I think we all had different shoes. But as far as finding vegan, non-leather, non-suede hiking shoes that are really good support and that are waterproof, for me, it's just a matter of going into REI or whatever kind of mountain gear shop near you and asking the person there in the shoe department what shoes they have that they can recommend based on the type of terrain you're doing, looking for waterproof, I would recommend highly, that are non-leather. And, you know, often when I do that, they immediately say, oh, they mean vegan shoes. Okay, sure. For vegan shoes, non-leather, you know, animal product free, however you want to phrase it so they understand. They always know which ones to recommend. And it's getting more prevalent that there are vegan shoes out there. So you should not have a problem. The particular ones I got, I absolutely love. And I probably need to order another pair because I've learned that shoes, I don't care what kind of shoes, hiking shoes, sneakers, whatever it is, any shoes that I love, they eventually go out of stock. So the thing to do is always buy more than one pair of whatever it is you love, like running shoes or something like that. The brand of the shoes I have is Salomon. And I think the shoes that I have are technically trail runners, but they're super comfortable. They're breathable. They've got really good support. And they have the Kevlar quick lace system, which I really, really, really love. I hate tying shoes. And they often come undone. I don't know. I just really love the quick lace system, which they have. And very importantly, these shoes are waterproof. And I know they're truly waterproof because there was a point on the trail where I made a mistake in terms of which way to go around a bog. And I walked right through the bog. And I did so once I realized I was in the bog, I panicked. And instead of turning around and going out of the bog, I just kept going forward very quickly and with great panic. And the good news is I did not face plant right there in the bog, which could easily have happened because once my shoes started sinking, I was practically running to get through it. But I know my shoes are waterproof because they sunk into this bog. And it was pretty funny. David and Seb were watching me and Bridie was behind me. And of course, she learned from my mistake. She went back out and went a different way. She did not go through the bog. And David and Seb were just watching me just almost face plant. But it was a good metaphor for how I kind of go through life. I plow through. If I encounter a challenge, I don't look back. I just keep going forward. And I always get through, even if I'm a little muddy at the end. But because I prepared, I'm furthering this metaphor, I am usually no worse for wear by the time I end up on the other side. And I always wind up on the other side, even if my shoes are wet. But they never sunk through, like the wetness never seeped through, which was pretty awesome. So shoes, number one, and you can definitely find non-leather shoes. If you have leather shoes still from your pre-vegan days and they're working for you, I've said before that there is a question I think we have to ask when we're going through something like that. The question is there, am I causing harm by continuing to wear these shoes? And what gain is there for me getting rid of these shoes? A lot of it is often I don't feel comfortable wearing any leather, even if it's from my pre-vegan days or wool or whatever it is. But if you have still have leather shoes that are working for you until they wear out, wear them. And then, you know, I can tell you and I can assure you that there are plenty of vegan non-leather hiking shoes, trail running shoes, running shoes, sneakers, etc. Now, speaking of being proofed against water, we also brought waterproof pants that just go over your pants and a waterproof anorak that had a hood. In addition, we had great socks, and I was also glad I brought some ankle compression socks. I think they definitely helped. I have strong ankles. It's not like I have weak ankles, but I thought, you know, for the kinds of walk we're doing 15 miles a day on average. I wanted to just make sure I had something like that, and they were super helpful. We had good day packs, each one of us, with lots of pockets and a section. David and I had a section in ours for a camelback for water. And we made sure to pack a little emergency kit containing like Band-Aids and second skins. Second skin Band-Aids are lifesavers, by the way. We had antibiotic cream, ibuprofen, and whatnot. But I think we came home with most of it. We really didn't have a need, thank goodness, for any of that. I think I used a couple second skins. Second skins are like these Band-Aids that they're great proof against blisters or if you feel a blister coming on. So I felt a little bit of a soreness on my right pinky toe coming on, and I just put the second skin on there, and I never had a problem again. It's just amazing. I had no discomfort hiking. Blisters never formed. I think maybe we took some ibuprofen for a headache at one point or whatever, but it was pretty good. And even after we were sore from walking so much every day, the body is such an amazing thing. Even on nights where my feet were killing me by the time I went to bed, because we were walking 15 miles a day, and I was treated to a foot massage by my husband a couple times. By the next morning, I felt strong and ready to get back out there. It's just amazing how quickly the body can heal and recover. So even though we didn't have any major issues, of course, there were a couple days. My feet hurt. My ankles were a little sore. The compression socks definitely helped. We really had no issues. I think every one of us except for Bridie had some kind of slip, but nothing really major. And we were very lucky. And I think part of it was they were also very prepared and we were very careful going along the route. There were definitely some times that were more treacherous than others. And we were just really careful and really mindful so that we didn't get hurt. Because that would be just the worst, absolute worst thing in the world would be to get hurt or have a sprain or something that just hindered you from going forward. So again, the benefit of a trip like this that we did was the company transported all of our bags to each of our accommodations every day. And if you don't go through a company like Wilderness Scotland, there are companies that you can just go directly to yourselves. The company I think Wilderness Scotland used was called Travel Lite, L-I-T-E, something like that. But there are plenty of baggage transfer services you can hire directly. And so what happened was, is we would leave our bags after we showered and dressed. We would pack up our bags, our suitcases, you know, our main luggage, and leave them with the hotel. I mean, these hotels do this for thousands and thousands of people all the time. So it was just this whole system. We would leave the bags. They would come get the bags. We were already gone by then. And when we arrived in our next destination, there was our luggage. And so all we needed was our day pack. So the downside of doing it this way, it's the only downside. I mean, this is something we assessed at the end, is that we slept in a different place every single night we were there. Probably like 10 different places, because we did the 100 miles in about 7 days and we stayed in hotels or inns at either end of the walk. So I think it was like 10 different places. And that was probably my least favorite part, just in the sense that we didn't really get to see anything in the places we were in. Not really, because we would sometimes get there at like 6 o'clock at night, depending on how many miles we walked that day. And so we would, you know, sit down, maybe shower, maybe not, have dinner, and then, you know, go to sleep, and we'd get up at 6 o'clock the next morning. So I would either stretch it out more next time so that we could stay in a place one extra day, or just book it on our own, and that way we'd have some time to really enjoy the places we visited. But it wasn't like it was bothering me during the trek. It was just kind of more upon reflection at the end of it. I would do it a little differently next time, because I want to go to the towns. I want to see some sights. I want to relax a little bit. I want to have time to read and write. Just have some downtime, but that's easy to fix. And you can choose, even if you go through an outfit like Wilderness Scotland, you can choose how many days in which you do the trek. So this was 100 miles, and we did it in 7 days. You can do 8, you can do 9, you can pick it. So you can definitely stretch it out. Before I get to the trek itself, before I forget, I want to recommend a film I saw on the flight out. It is incredibly beautiful. It's called Valley of the Wolves, and it is just stunning. It had me at the first moment. I was hooked from the first moment, and I cried the entire time because it was so beautiful. It's about a man who's the director of the film, Jean-Michel Bertrand, who for 3 years observed and tracked wolves in the wild in the French Alps. And he is just absolutely incredible. There are a few films with the title Valley of the Wolves, so look for the one that is in the French Alps that's directed by Jean-Michel Bertrand, B-E-R-T-R-A-N-D. And there's another one, when I was looking for this to make sure you could find it, there's another one called In the Valley of the Woods, which seems to be about reintroducing wolves into Yellowstone, which is a very important story to be told. I haven't seen that one, but check that one out as well. The one in the French Alps looks like it's still on the festival circuit as of July 2017, the time I'm recording this. So keep your eye out for it. It doesn't seem to be anywhere online where I can recommend you just go watch it, but please go find it. It's absolutely stunning. I think you'll really appreciate it. So for the trek we did, as I said, we started just north of Glasgow, a city we had only been to once at night for a short period of time to see a comedy show. So our plan was to spend the day there in Glasgow before we headed to our hotel in a nearby suburb. So we flew into Edinburgh late Sunday and headed straight to the Marriott at the airport where we were meeting Seb and Brady, who we had seen just 6 months before on our coming back from Cape Town. But we were very excited to see each other again. And so if you knew Brady and Seb and their ridiculous adorableness, yes, I know you're listening to this, guys. You can imagine them coming out to greet our taxi with great enthusiasm. And those of you who are coming on our Thailand trip or our Vietnam trip will get to see their ridiculous adorableness. The problem is that enthusiasm led to my poor husband getting distracted while he was trying to pay the taxi as we were getting out of the taxi. And wait for it, we walked into the hotel lobby and realized the taxi had just sped away with David's cell phone. So I swear we have one of these stories on every trip. I think everybody does. We left one of our bags on the train platform in Belfast in Northern Ireland. I missed my ferry back to a ship so that I had to take a plane back to, a little biplane back to the ship. I recently left my laptop on a plane going down to LA. But in all of these cases, there's a happy ending. In this case, it all worked out very quickly. The Marriott was amazing in helping us get a hold of the taxi company, a reason you should always get your receipt, because we had the number and the name of the taxi company on the receipt. And the phone was back in David's possession within an hour or two, but it was a pretty stressful way to start the trip. But the drama was behind us. And the next morning, we had breakfast in Edinburgh at the hotel, and then we got ready to set out for Glasgow, which is just a quick train ride away. And we commenced exploring that city. By the way, before we left the Marriott and were waiting for our taxi to take us to the train station, a woman who was waiting to register saw me and asked if I was calling Patrick Gaudreau. And I said I was. And she said she used to listen to my podcast, which was really lovely. And then, I'm not kidding you, we came back to the Marriott in Edinburgh after our whole, you know, 9-day excursion in the Highlands. We came back to Edinburgh, because that's where we were flying out from, and we stayed in the same Marriott. And we were at the end of our trip, and we were waiting for the taxi to take us to the airport, and a lovely gentleman came up and asked if I was calling Patrick Gaudreau, and I confirmed I was, and he said he used to listen to my podcast many years ago. It was really lovely to meet podcast listeners in the UK, but in both cases, they said they didn't listen to my podcast anymore. I kind of busted them on that, because they were like, oh yeah, I'd listen. I haven't listened in a while. Busted. And teased them a little bit about that, but I don't know, maybe I should stop the podcast, because maybe there's nobody listening anymore. You just used to listen and you're not listening anymore. So I don't know. Let me know if you're still listening. But it was really lovely. Apparently, I have lots of listeners who stay at the Marriott in Edinburgh. So nice to meet both of you. And I hope to see others of you on our travels. So we arrived in Glasgow and walked around Glasgow. We went to the Glasgow Cathedral, which is beautiful. The necropolis next door, I highly recommend. It's a pretty incredible cemetery up on a hill. And it opened in 1833. It's this Victorian cemetery that's inspired by Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris. It's quite beautiful. It meanders like a city. There's lots of monuments, and I do recommend it if you're visiting. There's a pub right across the street from the necropolis and the cathedral, and we were going to go there to have a drink, but also to eat. It was about 2 o'clock, I think, by now, and a friend who used to live in Glasgow recommended it. And it was a cool old traditional pub, but the menu was just pretty much typical bar food, which we knew we'd be having a lot on the trip. So we looked on Happy Cow, and it turned out we were just a 15-minute walk from a relatively new vegan restaurant called Picnic, and it was perfect. It was about 9 months old at the time we were there in July 2017. And what was really nice about it was that the menu was created with a mind toward delicious but healthful food. And it was just lovely and bright and pretty. I had the tofu egg salad sandwich. David and Brighty had a really lovely lentil burger. I think Seb had the pastrami sandwich, which is spelled P-A-S-T-R-A-M-H. E-A-T. So instead of M-E-A-T, it was M-H-E-A-T. And I think that's the name of the meat that is made by the company who makes this meat. So it was really delicious. The pastrami sandwich was like pastrami. And, you know, I would rather people just call it meat with M-E-A-T, but I get it. It's a marketing thing and it's what they call their meat. So it's fine. But what's really cool is that there is a company in Glasgow and apparently they're doing really well. They make vegan meat. It's called Sagaia, S-G-A-I-A, and you can find them at sagaiafoods.co.uk, and I will make sure their link is on the show notes for today's episode. And on their websites, you can find out where their meats, where their charcuterie and their cheeses are sold, and I think you can order online as well. They have a minimum order amount, and they deliver to the UK. So Picnic, thumbs up. Sagaia Meats, thumbs up. So we walked around some more, and we were on our way to Kelvin Grove Park, where there's a Kelvin Grove Art Gallery and Museum, and it's supposed to be pretty cool, but it started raining pretty heavily, and we weren't quite yet prepared for that, so we went into a pub for drinks, and we started planning our dinner. I really didn't realize how many vegan restaurants Glasgow has. I don't know that they were there 4 years ago, 5 years ago when we were there. Maybe they were. As I said, we were only there briefly, but maybe I just didn't do enough research at the time. But now that we were there, we looked up where to go, and we had already talked to the owner at Picnic, and we had landed on, we decided to land in a pub called The 78, which is a vegan pub. And it really turns out that that there are lots of vegan pubs in Glasgow. And in fact, the people who own The 78 also own Mono and Stereo. So there's like a music theme there, and they're all vegan. So yeah, all these like vegan places in Glasgow puts Oakland to shame. I'm putting out there right now a call for anybody who wants to open a vegan restaurant in Oakland. I'm not going to help or anything. I'll promote it. But I'm just telling you to come to Oakland and open more vegan restaurants. It's just remarkable to me how many other cities are doing so much better than Oakland. I think Veg News Magazine recently voted Oakland one of the best vegan cities. I don't know. I think we could do better. I think we could do a lot better. New York, LA, they put us to shame. And when I say Oakland, I even mean the whole San Francisco Bay Area. There are a lot fewer restaurants in San Francisco and Oakland and Berkeley than you think. So anyway, shout out to Glasgow, and really impressed with their vegan restaurants. So it was a pub. It was pub food and it was good. And I think I had a burger. Seb had the chili nachos. There was garlic bread with cheese. There were soups. I mean, it was really good. So I highly recommend The 78 vegan pub in Glasgow. We ventured back out into the rain and we drove up to our place in Mulgay, which is just north of Glasgow, where a lot of people stay at the beginning of the West Highland Way. It's kind of where it begins. We stayed at this place called the Premier Inn, and it's affiliated with the next door Beefeater restaurant, and that's where we were to have breakfast. So yeah, the Beefeater, it was ridiculous. Yeah, but our breakfasts were good. Breakfasts were included in every place we stayed, almost every place. I think almost every place. I feel like there was one place. Maybe this was the one place we had to pay, but every other place included our breakfast. And, you know, it was pretty much a traditional Scottish breakfast, which is very easy to make vegan because a traditional Scottish breakfast, or really British breakfast, would consist of baked beans, baked or roasted tomatoes, hash browns, depending on the place. Sometimes they had hash browns, sometimes they didn't, and toast and mushrooms. And so that's kind of a typical British breakfast. When there was a vegetarian Scottish breakfast, we would choose that and, of course, just opt out of the eggs. But when it was a traditional Scottish breakfast that had sausages and bacon and eggs, of course, we would opt out of that. One comment I did make by the end, and I'm sure you can identify with this, is that in the cases where we did or do in general pay for breakfasts or any meal where we eliminate things like eggs and bacon and sausage or whatever, we never ask to pay less. We never ask to pay less. And I think in the future, I may do that differently. It's kind of ridiculous to eliminate things on a prefix menu and still pay the same as if we were getting the full meal. And it's not like they doubled up on the beans or anything. I mean, there were plenty of places where it was buffets and we can get as much as we wanted. But some places it would just bring us, you know, a small amount of beans, the mushroom and the tomato. And again, for us, it was fine because we had lots of other food as well. There was toast, there was often fruit, and sometimes there were vegan sausages, and I'll tell you about that. But Yeah, I think when we eliminate things from a menu, I think we should pay for only what we're eating. My opinion, just my opinion. So many of the places we stayed had soya milk. Some even had almond milk, possibly in preparation for us. And I do remember that Bridie also brought a quart of soya milk with her, and we would sometimes replenish when we found them in markets. I'll get back to what it meant to bring the food with us. So at the Beef Eater, we ordered our traditional Scottish breakfast, and we had toast with jam. I think they even had peanut butter. There were beans, hash browns, tomatoes, mushrooms. And at the end of our breakfast, at the end of each breakfast for the next 8 days, we made our sandwiches for our lunch. Now, in some of the segments of our trek, there were pubs to stop at for food for lunch, I guess, but that was rare. And from the start, our plan was to be completely self-reliant and not have to worry about whether we would find food, you know, that we wanted and food that was going to be satisfying for us and edible. So prior to meeting up with us in Edinburgh, Bridie and Seb had spent time in London where they bought a bunch of meats and cheeses, vegan meats and cheeses, like meat slices and cheese slices, and they brought some lettuce and onion and vegan mayonnaise. Bridie had brought along a little lunch bag and a little cooler. It's like a little cooler bag and a couple of ice packs. So every night at each hotel we arrived at, she would just go up to the counter, you know, when we were checking in, ask them if they would put the little bag in the refrigerator and the ice packs in the freezer so that everything would stay fresh and cold throughout the day. And it was brilliant. Every time when we checked out, Bridie would ask for the bag back and the ice packs, and it was never an issue. It was so simple. Bridie's kind of brilliant like that. So very early on our trip, David dubbed her our quartermaster, which was fitting. A quartermaster in military terms is, of course, the one who's in charge of supplies and food. And it's Bridie's specialty. If you remember the travel episode I did on our trip to Bavaria in southern Germany, you'll remember that in order for us to have a traditional Christmas dinner, we were having Christmas together in southern Germany. We had an Airbnb, so we had a kitchen and everything. Bridie brought with her, transported with her, packed with her from Bangkok to Germany, a cashew loaf she had made, and she has made for like the last 20 years or something like that. So she wanted to have this cashew loaf for her Christmas dinner. Gravy, I think stuffing and some other things, packed with her from Bangkok to Germany. Yeah, she's our quartermaster, and we were very well prepared in the food realm. But if you decide to do something like that, that being taking sandwich slices, not taking a loaf with you, it's really very simple. It wasn't a big deal at all. I think I have a photo also in our pack of photos that just show you what the bag was like. It's just a small, you know, just a small bag. And they bought enough. I mean, we had slices really up until the end. I made our final sandwiches the day we were back at the Marriott, and David and I were getting ready to go to the airport, and we just wanted some sandwiches for the flight. And I made some sandwiches that day, and that was kind of the end of it. So Bridie had planned very well. Bridie, well done. And we had everything we needed for that entire trip. So each day we would buy bread or rolls from local groceries. One day we had trouble because we were in a place that didn't have a village. So we just took some bread from our breakfast buffet and we made our sandwiches. I'm telling you this because all this just requires a little preparation and thinking ahead. And that's what I recommend always anyway. Parents prepare and make sure they always have food for their kids when traveling or when just having an outing for the day. So why wouldn't we do that for ourselves? It's just a matter of thinking ahead to make sure you have what you need. So with our sandwiches packed and whatever fruit or nuts or bags of popcorn or crisps or sometimes chocolate bars or energy bars we would find at different groceries, different markets as we were in the little villages, we always had a delightful lunch. If we didn't have those sandwich fillings, it would have been a different situation, but this is how we chose to do this trip. You know, when we stayed in Bavaria, we had an Airbnb so we could buy things from a grocery store and make them at home. And of course, I love doing that because you eat a lot more healthfully, but that was conducive to that trip. This was a day we were trekking 15 miles every day, and it wasn't conducive to just have food in one place and go back to. So even if you're not vegan, this isn't, you know, I don't think it's unique to being vegan. I think making sure you have food prepared and so that you can just stop anywhere along the trail that you wanted to when you were hungry to have lunch is the way to go. And of course, the other reason we were able to do this was because in this situation, we had the baggage transfer. So our main luggage was brought to our accommodations. If we were backpacking and carrying all our stuff, yeah, like it would have been a little harder, but people do it. It's not unheard of. So we were happy to start our trek and we had a lovely first day. We were very lucky with the weather. We had very little rain. It was beautiful. The landscape was gorgeous on our first day. And on our first day, we also stopped at a distillery, Glengoyne Distillery, where we ate our sandwiches by a little waterfall. We had a private tasting at the distillery. We discovered some new whiskey we really like, and we just had a lovely time there. That first day was 12 and a half miles, and then we stopped in our first town called Drymen, which I think all of us really loved, Drymen. And this particular trek did not have a lot of distilleries on the actual trek, but there are other ones. If you look at Wilderness Scotland, I forgot which one it is. Maybe it's the West End, what is it called? There's something End or the Rob Roy. There are others that actually go through, I think, Cairngorms Park, and there are some distilleries just because you stop at these different villages. But this one had only the one distillery, and it was a really nice way to start our trek. So when we first arrived in Drymen, Bridie and I scoped. It was a little village, had just a little square, and we scoped out the grocery store situation. There was a grocery store right there on the square. We picked up, and it was kind of a convenience store. It wasn't, Whole Foods or anything like that, but we found some snacks. We got some popcorn. I think there were some crisps there. For the next day's lunch, there were some fruit. I always grabbed bananas when I would find bananas, apples. And then we checked out the three dinner options in the village and we decided on a place. Oh gosh, I'll put it on the website. I can't remember the name of it, but there was a menu posted on the outside of each one of the pubs. And we decided to eat at this one. There were definitely some vegan friendly and vegan dishes that we knew we'd be able to figure out. So we stopped at the pub, we had a drink, and then, we were just really enjoying that first day. It was a beautiful late afternoon. Bridie and I decided to leave the boys at the pub for a bit, go down to our B&B and just check in and get our stuff all settled in. And then we would go back and meet them at the pub. It was just a quarter mile down the street. So we walked to Bramblewood Bed and Breakfast, and we showered and we checked in and they wanted to know our breakfast preferences for the next day. And it was really lovely because they must have already heard from Wilderness Scotland that we were vegan. I had to remind the young woman who was the daughter of the proprietors. And the next morning, well, I'll tell you about our breakfast. It was lovely. So they took down our order knowing, beans and hash browns. And of course, we requested Scottish porridge, and that would have been made with soy milk. They had soy milk there, and it would have been made with water. So we went there, checked in, and went back to the pub. And at the pub, we had a really good meal. It was actually funny because there were some things that turned out to not be vegan that should have been, like penne pasta. They had a penne arrabbiata on the menu, but the bartender was very kind because he kept checking with the chef. He had to keep going away and go check with the chef, and then he would come back. And he did this on his own accord. It was very sweet. But it turned out the pasta wasn't vegan, which was weird. Anyway, I had a really nice green salad with a balsamic dressing. The lentil soup, which was more of a dal, like a yellow split pea dal, was really good. Seb hasn't stopped talking about it. Was delicious. We had ridiculous skinny fries that were so good. We ate more than I'm comfortable saying. Onion rings, there was and vegetable curry. So David and Bridie had the vegetable curry. So it was just, it was great. But even this guy, even the guy who worked at this pub said, oh yeah, good luck being vegan as you get farther north into the Highlands. I don't know what these people are talking about. I think I know what these people are talking about. I think, as I said earlier, when you look through that lens of deprivation, you don't know what's available because you just don't look for it. But when you look for abundance, that's what you find. When you look for deprivation, that's what you perceive. So, we were never worried. We just never were concerned, and we had no reason to be concerned, as you'll continue to hear. So we finished our dinner and we went to sleep, and we were really thrilled because everyone was warning us about midges, these little flies that bite. We never had, I think Bridie had a few bites. David had a couple. I never had a bite. Nothing that made our trip unpleasant, which again, we were really lucky. I brought some some repellent, but we never needed it. And we were just really lucky. I think there was one day we were at a brook eating lunch and they were kind of annoying, but we were prepared. So be prepared for the midges. Everyone will warn you about the midges. I think Brighty saw a young woman on one of our segments whose legs were covered in hundreds of what looked like midge bites. It could have been other things, but she was a camper, and that probably increases your chances of being bitten when you're sleeping in a tent and just sitting outside. But I'm really grateful we had a pretty easy time of it in that area. So the next morning at Bramblewood Bed and Breakfast, it was lovely. The couple who owned it was lovely. And in fact, the husband of the couple was actually from Rwanda. So it was fun to share our experience of just having been in Rwanda. And he was lovely and just made just a lovely breakfast for us. In fact, it was my favorite breakfast, even though we had the same Scottish traditional breakfast the entire time, which is standard. His were the best because he had vegan sausages, that Linda McCartney vegan sausages. The mushrooms were better cooked than any mushrooms we'd had on the whole trip. The beans were made with peppers and onions, so they were just really flavorful and delicious. And there was cereal and there was soy milk. And by the way, every place also had cereal. So there was always cereal, always soy milk. That we would either bring, or most places had soy milk. And yeah, really good breakfast. And we then decided to head out. We can't tarry in any of these places. You have to just head out because then we'd had a long day ahead of us. I think this was a 15-mile day. I'm pretty sure this was a 15-mile day. I'm pretty certain. I know how my feet felt at the end. And it was a lovely day, another gorgeous day. And you can see some of the footage. I will tell you that Seb, he's amazing. He trekked with a drone. So we have some drone footage, which is unbelievable. So if you want to see any of some pretty dramatic footage from, you know, 100 feet up in the air, definitely go check out the show notes for today's episode and you can see it. So one of the days we were climbing Connick Hill, which is about 1,200 feet up, which is about 360 meters for you smarty pants metric folks. I'm horrible with the metric system. And about as many down. So it was a dramatic climb, a dramatic day. The scene from the top of Connick Hill was just absolutely gorgeous. And it was the first day we droned before we got to Connick Hill, before we got to the top. Once we were at the top, it was too windy. But it's pretty cool. So go check out that footage. And we ate at the top of Connick Hill, had our lunch there. We'd already had our awesome sandwiches made. And then we made our way back down, enjoyed some time on the bank of Loch Lomond, because it was going to be where we were going to be trekking the next day, entirely along Loch Lomond, which was gorgeous. And we droned some more, so there's some great footage there. And we hung out for a bit. Brighty and I noticed a ton of garbage on the beach, right there on the beach where we were hanging out, broken glass, tons of garbage, and we found a little plastic bag that this person had also left. So we cleaned up the garbage on the bank of Loch Lomond, and we gave it to a woman we saw in a car and asked if she would throw it out in a bin. So it was our good deed for the day, and then we moved on and continued on to our next stop. It was a pretty long day, pretty steep incline at the end, but it was well worth it. We stopped at Rowardennen Hotel at that point, which was mediocre at best, and we had pieced together a dinner of pizza and salad and, of course, onion rings and chips. A breakfast, as I said, is often a buffet that you choose from, and in this case, it was one of those situations where I asked for soy milk. They said they don't carry soy milk, and then he's like, wait a second, and went in the back and came back with soy milk. So Alpro is the common brand in the UK, I have to say, for someone who has grown up in the US. Alpo is a very common, well-known brand of cheap dog food, Alpo. So every time I hear Alpro, A-L-P-R-O, as the soy milk company in the UK, I cannot help but think of dog food, which, you know, not pleasant. So Rowardennen was not in a village. This is the case where we did borrow some bread from the breakfast buffet, made our sandwiches. I asked them for some foil to wrap the sandwiches in, and we headed out to our next part of the trail, which was probably our favorite part, or mine and David and Seb's, I think. I think Brighty's was Connick Hill. It was absolutely gorgeous. And the really cool thing was at the very end, when we were kind of nearing the end, the last couple miles, which are always the worst, however many miles you walk, the last mile is always the worst. And the lake was behind us now, and we had large dramatic mountains and hills to pass through to our next destination. It started to rain. It was really the first time we had seen rain. except for in Glasgow that first night. So, okay, maybe it's the second time we saw rain, but on the trek, it was the first time. And we just landed at this little campsite that had a restaurant, and it was just perfect because it started pouring by the time we got into the restaurant. I had a really lovely dinner. We pieced together a nice dinner. Again, there was vegetable curry, lentil soup. David had the penne arrabbiata. In this case, the penne was vegan, and it was so good. It was, I think, like one of the best penne arrabbiatas I've had, or at least on that trip. So we were done with dinner and we walked over to a little supplies store. So because it was a campsite, it had a little supply store, and we bought rolls and bars and snacks for the next day's lunch. And of course, the bread rolls. And Brady and Seb and I bought the most brilliant purchase. They get all the credit for it. We bought umbrellas because we thought we might encounter rain again. And it was actually the best thing we did, because even when we were in villages at night, it was nice. You know, we had anoraks with hoods, but it was nice to have the umbrella. So if you do a hike like this, there are plenty of times when you're just walking through farmland. It's not like you're encumbered with this umbrella, but it was really convenient to have. So we bought the umbrellas, we bought the food, and we went to our place where we were sleeping, which was called the Drover's Inn. This is where our bags were waiting, and they have an affiliated accommodations across the street, which was our least favorite accommodations. Very bare bones. Not even a shower, just a tub with a shower attachment in the tub, which was functional. It was fine. The only thing that made it worth mentioning is that the pub itself has been around since 1705, which is pretty amazing. But the problem is it's called the Drover's Inn, and you know what that means. This was a place, a stopover for drovers. A drover is someone who drives sheep or cattle over long distances to market, in other words, to be slaughtered. Now, this could take, when you drive these animals, it could take days or it could take months. And so railways eventually replaced droving in the mid-19th century, but this was a popular thing, obviously, in the 18th century. So the Drover's Inn, the entrance of the Drover's Inn, which was the pub, pretty much, they don't have the accommodations there, didn't reflect droving as much as hunting, which is clearly prevalent in that area, and it was disgusting. There were a ton of stuffed dead animals, obviously dead, hung or displayed or mounted. It was like a horror show. The entrance was like a horror show. I don't know, 50 animals stuffed in, and it was not a very big entrance way. So it was pretty gross. Past the reception area, the pub itself was pretty cool. And we spent the rest of our night there before going to sleep, having breakfast the next day. Same breakfast I've mentioned, also some fruit. And we made our sandwiches and made our way out. And this day, I think, was mostly kind of farmland and then kind of mixed farmland and then some hills and then some forest, which was lovely. And the farmland is, you know, you're really mixed. You see the sheeps and the lambs. And, you know, I'm always happy to see the animals, but you know why they're there. So that also makes you sad. Like, their inevitable fate makes you sad. And it's really interesting because there was even a time, I think it was in Inverlochy, when I asked the manager, the person showing us around the grounds, if there was wildlife. And he said, oh yeah, there's Highland cows and there's some sheep. And I'm like, that's not wildlife. Like, those are domesticated animals. And I didn't say that to him, but we didn't see a lot of wildlife except for birds, which, you know, was awesome. But the only time we saw any red deer, was much later on, and it was at a place that is so overrun with tourists that the deer have become acclimated to being fed. So they were like sitting right by the roadside, not even startled that cars would come and people would go right up to them and either feed them or take pictures. That was the only time we saw mammals. I'm trying to think, we saw a couple frogs on a path, we saw lots of insects, we saw lots of birds, but we didn't see a lot of mammals. And, you know, I have great concerns about what animal agriculture does, not only to the direct victims, but to the indirect victims as well, the wild animals who are demonized and killed at the behest of ranchers. And of course, this is prevalent in the UK as well as in the US. And I've recommended this book before. It's called Feral by George Monbiot, to really understand this phenomenon that's happening in the UK. And one of the things that came out of that book for me was learning about an amazing organization called Trees for Life. And they are working up in the Highlands to reforest basically parts of the Highlands. And they do this through, you know, planting and through just supporting natives and returning these ancient ecosystems back to the Highlands, because a lot of the UK, just as in the US, is overrun with animal agriculture. So we saw a lot of that in this portion of our trek. And one of the things I try to do when I'm traveling is make a point to support organizations in the countries that we've just traveled to. So of course, when we were in Rwanda, I made a donation to, and I support monthly, actually, the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund International. In South Africa, I supported a farm sanctuary we visited in Franschhoek. In Scotland, I made a donation to this organization. I had been meaning to make a donation since I had discovered them, and it was a perfect time to make a large donation to them, having just been there and kind of seeing firsthand how little wildlife there was. I mean, we trekked 100 miles, and I didn't see any mammals. So, I thought they deserved some support. They're really a wonderful organization. You can find them at treesforlife.org.uk. The term rewilding is appropriate to apply to them. So if you've heard me talk about that before, I encourage you to check them out, especially if you live in the UK or Scotland or the Highlands. So we ended up getting to Tindrum pretty early, which was really nice because it was very clean. It was really lovely. There was good Wi-Fi. It was the first time we were like going to sit down. I think we got there at like 3:30, and it was nice. It was nice to just sit down and get on my computer. I know it sounds terrible, but it was, and catch up on emails and send some pictures out. And really about a half hour after we arrived, it started downpouring. So we were very lucky to miss that rain. And in the town, Tindrum, there was a restaurant called Real Food Cafe, whose name was promising. They did have a lot of food I would not consider real, but they did have vegan options. They had a vegetable chickpea curry, vegan soups, lentil burger, the chips and onion rings, of course, and they even had some vegan desserts. So it was a really pleasant place and a welcome reprieve from the rain. The accommodations were nice at the Tindrum Inn, nothing fancy. There was a tub, which I needed desperately, but otherwise it was pretty good. And you're probably getting the sense that the accommodations on a trip like this were mixed, and they were by default and by design. Some were just really what was available in the villages we were in on that day's route, and some we picked as part of an upgrade option, which I'll get to in a bit. But Tindrum Inn was lovely if you're up in that way, and we started our trek out the next day, and we were on our way to Glencoe. And everyone talks about Glencoe being incredibly beautiful, both the journey there and when you're there. And indeed it was, but we didn't really get to see a lot of it because we had torrential rain trying to get there. So we didn't really get to see, I mean, we could see the drama and the beauty, the dramatic landscapes as you were walking, but it was so miserable and so cloudy, but also kind of romantic and dramatic. It's the Highlands, and it just turned out we couldn't walk the whole way. So we stopped at a little pub, and we took a break, and I'll spare you all the details, but we were able to get a taxi to our next place. So we had just done about 15 miles that day, maybe a little less, maybe 12. We were supposed to do 19, so we got cut short a little bit because of the rain. But the good thing is that we were going to a beautiful place called Glencoe House, and if you want to see one of the drone footages of this place, I highly recommend you checking it out. It was really lovely. We had kind of, because it was the four of us, we had a suite at the top of Glencoe House, and it was really lovely because we had our own private dining room, which was next to our ridiculously beautiful private sitting room. And we paid for this dinner as a special treat. And the catering company that was used by Glencoe House, they made an effort. They made a nice enough dinner for four vegans, but it was pretty mediocre. And I don't think that it was only mediocre because it was vegan. When I looked at the menu for the non-vegan options, it wasn't remarkable. And just to be clear, because I saw this question come up, Wilderness Scotland, who made all the accommodations reservations, they were the ones we told we were vegan that they passed on to the places we slept at. In terms of the breakfast, I mean, I don't think it mattered in a lot of the inns because there just were vegan options. But like at Bramblewood, I think they had gotten the message, which is why they had vegan sausage. I don't think they would have had vegan sausage otherwise. And then the two places we chose to have dinners at, Glencoe and Inverlochy Castle, they knew we were vegan and they made a vegan menu for us. So again, Wilderness Scotland really did a fantastic job. I did reach out to them directly myself to the two places we were having dinner at because I wanted to make sure, and they assured us that they had a vegan menu, and indeed they had a vegan menu for us. So they did a good enough job, but considering what we paid for that dinner, it was okay. And considering what Inverlochy did for the same price, was pretty remarkable. So I'll get to that another time. But it was a lovely place. Glencoe is definitely a place I would go back to and want to spend more time at. So we left Glencoe and we started our next trek, and that was up the Devil's Staircase, which was rather ominously named. I don't really think it was as hard as the name makes it sound, but it's a very well-known hiking and cycling, mountain biking route that follows from Glencoe, or really King's House to be more precise, to Kinlochleven. That was our next stop. This part of the trek, mixed rain, not a lot, nothing that hindered us, and then clouds and then sun. It's one thing I've learned about the Highlands weather is that you just have no idea what it's going to do. Like, don't even bother looking at the weather. There's no point. It's a waste of time because the skies changed constantly, and that was our experience. So the skies changed, which again made for a beautiful, dramatic walk. And one of the things we didn't know, we did not expect, was that it's light so long throughout the days in the summer. So we would go to bed around 10 or 10:30 and it would still be light out because we're pretty far north, and we'd wake up at 6 a.m. and it would be light out. So we had long, wonderful long days, which really made a huge difference. So we had a gorgeous walk on this part of our trek. Some people have also asked if we saw other walkers a lot and if we felt overrun because it's a very popular trail. And I would say we never felt overrun. There were definitely times where we would see the same walkers again and again because everyone kind of stops at the same destinations, or you overtake some people walking and then you take a break, you know, a couple miles up and they overtake you. So you just kind of see the same people rotating again and again. And there were very few times where we were walking in a single row with lots of other people and we couldn't pass them and go at our own pace. So it was, for a popular trail in the summer where a lot of university students were clearly on the same track, did not feel overrun at all. So I think that says a lot, especially considering the fact that it was summer. So this was about a 9-mile walk, even with the Devil's Staircase, and we got to Kinlochleven, which is a much bigger town than any of the others we had stopped in, and had a beautiful river right outside our accommodations. There was another inn. It's called the Highland Getaway. Pretty simple, nothing to boast about, but there was a grocery store and a couple options for dinner. So Bridie and I hit the cooperative, the grocery store there, and we bought more bread for our sandwiches. At this point, Bridie was sick of the sandwiches, so she found a pre-made vegan sandwich that she and I each bought at the store. And then we bought popcorn and fruit and chocolate. And we also bought 2 boxes of vegan sausages, not for the next day's walk, but for the express purpose of asking the pub we were going to have dinner at to fry up those sausages for us, which they did. So we chose to not eat at the pub that we were staying at because their edible options were pretty limited. So we chose another pub called the Tail Race Inn. I don't even know what Tail Race means, but we saw some other walkers who we'd been seeing on the route, and one of whom was vegan, and I just forgot her name because she's reached out to me on Facebook since then. So it was pretty cool. We told her about where we were going and that we had these vegan sausages, and we headed over to Tail Race, and there was like pasta. There wasn't anything, wasn't amazing. It wasn't anything remarkable, but there was pasta, arrabbiata, or I think it was just like, maybe it wasn't arrabbiata. It was like sauce with basil. And we asked them to fry up the sausages for us, which they did. And we added them to our pasta. So it was pretty cool. And we did the same thing the next morning at the inn we were staying at. We had our traditional Scottish breakfast with sausages. And at that time, of course, we made our sandwiches again, which Bridie was boycotting at this point. And we headed out for the last day of our trek. And the good news is that we were heading to a castle. So onward we went, and we arrived finally at Fort William, which is where the route ends, the West Highland Way ends, and we took the requisite photos where all walkers of the West Highland Way end up. We grabbed a drink at a pub, and we toasted the end of our trek, and we left to go pick up our rental car. So we drove to our final accommodations, the final accommodations that were as part of our walk. We also stayed in one more town the next night, just because we wanted to extend our trip just by one more night. And so we headed to Inverlochy Castle, which was still part of our final, you know, our whole trek that Wilderness Scotland arranged for us. It's nestled in the foothills of Ben Nevis. It was built in 1863 as a private residence, which is ridiculous. It was just absolutely stunning. In 1969, it was converted to a country house hotel. The guys had to wear a jacket to dinner, which David brought with him and Seb borrowed from the hotel. So that worked out really well. And it was a really incredible way to end our trip. It was a real special way to end. We had drinks on the veranda, overlooking the incredible grounds, basking in the most gorgeous light. And at 8:30, we were escorted into dinner, where we were treated to the most beautiful, the most thoughtful, delicious meal we could have imagined in a non-vegan restaurant. I think it was then that I realized how much Glencoe House had paled. It was the same price, but at Inverlochy, so much care and thought had gone into the menu. I can't even name everything. There's some photos on the show notes for today's episode, but it was a several course meal and absolutely beautiful, including the dessert, which was really funny because Bridie and I, we all got the dessert. It was like the strawberry something something with basil, and it looked like it was sitting in a pool of strawberry soup, this really red color. And Bridie and I each looked down. We were across from one another. We put our spoon in and we looked up at each other with the same expression on our faces because we realized we had put our spoon into what was gelatin. And so we said to the guys, wait, hold on. I don't think this is vegan. It's clearly gelatin. And so we called over one of the servers and she said, no, it's absolutely vegan gelatin. This chef got the vegetarian, it's vegan, vegetarian gelatin. And so later on, I did ask to see the chef and thank him for this meal. And he said, yeah, no, it's the I got the, I was like, that's how much they went out of their way. I mean, clearly they could have made it easier and just made a chocolate cake because that's easy to do vegan. But he just made a beautiful meal for us. And it was really impressive. So once in a lifetime, kind of special meal, the likes of which we've rarely seen in a non-vegan establishment. The most recent experience I can recall, it was at Foliage in Franschhoek in Cape Town. Well, in South Africa, outside of Cape Town, Franschhoek is the name of the town. And if you listen to that episode, you may recall that they created an entirely vegan menu for us. It was all printed out, just like it was at Inverlochy Castle. The whole menu was printed. And it was the most colorful, gorgeous meal we've ever eaten. It was like art on the plate. And I'll make sure there's a few photos on today's episode show notes because it was just stunning. And I'm just always impressed. And once again, if you just ask for what you want. This is the kind of thing that people had no idea we were going to experience as vegans in the Highlands. And you know what? You guys were wrong. And I'm happy to say you were wrong because we had just incredible experiences. So the next morning, it was the same thing at Inverlochy. They had our vegan menu, breakfast already printed out, a lot of traditional Scottish breakfast items, but some special things as well. So if you ever get up to the Highlands and it's a special occasion, I really highly recommend you treat yourself, save for it, because it is a splurge. Some friends of ours got married there, the recent friends of ours who moved in across the street, and we've become very fast friends with them. They actually eloped and got married at Inverlochy Castle. So it was really fun to be there at the places where I'd seen her wedding photos, and it really is a place to take wedding photos or just take photos. It's just gorgeous. You can see some of those photos on my social media accounts and enjoy. And you can see the really awesome drone footage that we took when we were on the rowboat on the little lake there. with the, yeah, it's just amazing. So we left Inverlochy Castle, which is just outside of Fort William, and we decided we wanted to just go farther up and see Culloden, which is the battlefield, of course. That was the end of the Jacobites in 1746, when it was a battle between the Jacobites and the English, in which over 1,000, I mean, they don't have exact numbers, but it's about over 1,000 Jacobites were killed in about an hour and a handful of English, because they were two completely different kinds of warfare, and about 1,000 Jacobites were killed in about an hour and a handful of English. It was a very beautiful, sad place, really lovely exhibit if you're interested in history at all, and British history in particular. So we went up to Culloden, which is close to Inverness, but we did not get as far as Inverness. And as we were heading up, we stopped in a town called Aviemore. And we saw already on Happy Cow and Google, I think, too, the reviews of this place. So it looked very vegan friendly. And I think I had the best burger I've ever had in my life. It was a masala spiced lentil rice burger. And it was just absolutely delicious. Bridie and I had the burger. David had the tomato soup. Seb had a Thai vegetable peanut salad, which was just lovely. They had a proper bakery, so the breads they had were delicious, and they even had some vegan desserts. The chocolate cake was to die for, and the whole lunch was a lovely experience. Another example of, no, we were good. We were fine. Four happy vegans in the Highlands, and the weather was beautiful. We ate outside, so I highly recommend Mountain Cafe in Aviemore. So we left Culloden, we went up to Culloden, left Culloden, and we drove back on the east side of Loch Ness during the golden light of dusk. It was a perfect way to end our trip to the Highlands. And we stayed in Invergarry that last night. We had just an incredible time. And then we took the train back to Edinburgh. And I had already made reservations at David Ban. It's considered a premier vegetarian restaurant. David and I had been there the last time we were in Edinburgh about 4 years ago. And the food was very good, though I have to say the service had something to be desired, and it soured me on the place a bit. And I kind of remembered my experience there when we were there 4 years before. I find this sometimes, I don't know if you ever find this, but I find sometimes that non-vegan restaurants are more accommodating to vegans than vegetarian restaurants. And I mean vegetarian meaning not vegan. Vegan, but vegetarian. I just find this attitude sometimes, like they're cheese heavy and they just feel that that's a significant part of the meal, and to not have cheese means to really not enjoy the whole experience. And I don't know, I just got that vibe. And one of the reasons I was annoyed, well, I wasn't annoyed at the outset, but you know, the soup of the day wasn't vegan. I know more non-vegan restaurants whose soup of the day is always vegan. So we're in a vegetarian restaurant and the soup of the day wasn't even vegan. So, okay, fine. Okay. So we had already explained to the server that we were vegan and that we weren't ordering the soup because it wasn't vegan. And we placed our orders. David ordered the salad. I ordered some whatever I ordered. And then the next thing I know, they're coming over with some tart that had, it was very creamy tart with cheese. And then they had a salad that had cheese on top of it. And I said, no, those aren't ours. And he didn't put the tart down, but he put the salad down in front of David. And we called our server over and we said, this isn't vegan. There's cheese all over it. And he said, no, he didn't specify vegan. And I said, no, actually, he really did. I'm sitting right next to him and I heard him say that. So he just had this little attitudinal. But otherwise, the food was good. I just don't appreciate that. The food was good, and the service was okay. But we I recommend it because the food was good, and I hope you have a better experience. It wasn't horrible, but I'm very sensitive to those things because we ordered vegan, and it was like he was arguing with us, and I just don't think that's good service. So we had the Thai fritter of broccoli and marinated tofu, the smoked tofu is really fantastic at David Ban. I highly recommend just going for that. We had a salad of spinach and beetroot and apple and toasted walnuts and fennel. I think David had stir-fried vegetables with udon noodles and smoked tofu. Seb had, and again, the smoked tofu was just remarkable. Aubergine, chickpea, and cashew koftas. And I think Bridie ordered the rhubarb with coconut and oat milk pudding for dessert. And afterwards, we walked up the Royal Mile. It was Bridie and Seb's first time being in Edinburgh, and they were going to spend some time there the next day. We stopped at a pub for our last bit of whiskey, and we took much pleasure in the fact, or I did, that Seb seemed to have taken a liking to some single malt whiskey by the time we were wrapping up our trip. And we stayed in the Marriott that night. David did not leave his phone in the taxi. This time it was all good. We had breakfast the next day at the same buffet. I made some of those sandwiches I mentioned for our flight, and we headed home. And it was a wonderful trip. As always, it was it's wonderful to be back home. My kitties have not left my side, and I'm not exaggerating when I say Michiko is literally sitting next to my laptop as I record this.
Do you want to say hello? Can you say hello?
Doesn't want to say hello. And it's just been lovely to be back home in perfect Northern California weather. Unfortunately, I have injured myself since I've been back, and thank goodness I did not injure myself before I left. I was really eager to get outside and spend some time in the garden. So 2 days after we returned, I decided that, of course, at that moment, I needed to move a pot with a lemon tree in it. And it slipped and it crushed my toe, and it's still healing, but the excruciating pain has subsided a bit, and I'm excited to get back out and walking and running and hiking. And thank goodness this did not happen before our 100-mile trek in the Highlands. I highly recommend this particular trip if you are interested. I can put you in touch with the Wilderness Scotland folk, and really encourage you to do trips even outside of what people think would be vegan friendly. Ask for what you want and you shall receive, and defy anyone who says you won't be able to eat on trips like this for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Adreau. Thank you so much for listening.